You are listening to the OneOfUs.net Podcast Network. One of Us is a podcast and video network funded all but entirely by donations and subscriptions. We do accept pitches for audio-based or banner ads, but on a case-by-case basis. If you are interested in that, contact us at oneofusnet@gmail.com. With the amount of audio and video content we generate, it is expensive and extremely time-consuming to keep things running. Please go to the webpage oneofus.net and sign up for a subscription at $2, $5, $10, or $25 and get a ton of bonus content. One of Us needs and appreciates all your support. This movie review also comes for subscribers at Time Lord level or above, an uncut, unedited, longer video version of the review. Become a subscriber and check it out. I still insist that, you know, if this whole podcasting thing hadn't worked out for me, I would have made a fantastic intergalactic space hero. I mean, I looked into the whole barbarian hero thing. It wasn't as much my thing. You got to have the huge broadswords or double-ended axes. And I'm like Bugs Bunny with the muscle hanging down, you know. I was like, yeah, but I can tote a blaster, baby. Oh, yeah.
I mean, looking at this, Chris, you could at the very least be a space chef, probably.
Oh, you're damn right I'd be a space chef. I know how to cook also. I've already made gah. But I'm Chris, and joining me for this review of the movie Max Cloud, originally titled The Intergalactic Adventures of Max Cloud, are these fine gentlemen who may or may not be aliens in human skin. Joining me is Ryan.
How's it going?
Ben.
Howdy.
Max.
What's up, guys?
So if you are an alien in human skin, then just go ahead and tell me now.
I'm in Texas. If I say I'm an alien, someone's going to shoot me.
That's true. You get a pass for being in Texas because you can, in fact, be shot for that here. Max Cloud attracted me not because of its topic, which is basically a sort of meta Jumanji 2, but in outer space type of thing. But the fact I'm a big fan of Scott Adkins. Oh, yeah. Yes. Scott Adkins, super badass action guy who just has gotten such a short shrift, I feel like, because he should be a leading man and stuff. And he never gets to be the leading man. He's always like, oh, he's the main bad guy, or he's like the best friend of the hero. And I'm like, no, Adkins, actually, I've seen him in more than enough stuff to know that he can play a really good bad guy. He can play a really lovable, likable good guy. He's charming, and he's capable of a surprising amount of range for a guy whose body is also capable of a surprising amount of range. He's an amazing martial arts performer. And in this movie, he's kind of making fun of that part of himself to some degree. But Max Cloud starts with just a girl playing video games. Isabel Allen is Sarah, and she plays this game she loves called Max Cloud. I mean, at first we see it kind of being acted out with Scott Adkins as Max Cloud, the commander of the ship. Then it's like, okay, they're just playing a game. And her dad is strict, Tony, played by Sam Hazeldine, and he's like, look, you can't, I mean, this is the 90s, first off, you'll tell right off the bat.
It was literally 1990.
Yeah, it's like a Nintendo or something like that, or a Sega. He's like, nope, you can't play because you're playing too much, and unplugs the controller from the system. But then, for reasons that are reasons, she gets sucked into the game by the NPC, a character player, Space Witch, Jason Mazza, don't ask, who sort grabs her in after says, I wish I could just play video games all day, into the body of a dude, Jake, who is the chef aboard the ship, played by Elliot James Langridge, which is, once again, it's the Jumanji thing going on. So she's in a different gender body, and she has to team up with Max. Along the way, other characters show up, but all it comes down to is the ship is crash landed on a planet. They have a time limit because a sun is going to come over the horizon and burn off everything on the planet. There's an evil villain that wants to destroy the Earth there, Revengor, played by the always delightful John Hannah, and his assistant, She, played by Lashana Lynch. They have to figure out how to beat the time limit, beat the bad guy, get off the planet in time, and, oh, also, she'd kind of like to get back to her own body at some point and figure out why she's there at all. So you can already see, just from my description, there's a lot of very familiar things this is taking from. Now, does it work, is the question.
It gets really close.
Yeah, within the first 10 minutes, I'm like, is this going to work? Because it is super low budget.
The biggest issue for me is it realizes it's low budget, it realizes it's campy, and they try to lean into that, but they tried to lean into that the wrong way. They're like, oh, we're going to be campy. It's like, no, own it, but don't try to be it. You got to find that sweet spot. And it gets it sometimes, largely because Atkins is having the time of his life, but going, I'm going to be the most machismo my body and my personality can be. And he's like such a cartoon character about it that when they finally break past that, and he actually has character development, it's even funnier because, as we said earlier, Atkins has range. He's, you know, it's not going to be like Oscar worthy performance range, but for what he wants to do and what he does in film, he has that range to be a leading man here. He makes it a lot of fun. Also, the fight scenes, like the first real fight scene with Atkins, you're like, oh yeah, you are Scott Atkins. This is great. I love this moment right now.
And the music was cool, too. The music fit really well, I thought.
Yeah, it did. There's a mixture of sort of like chiptune-y stuff and then 80s sort of radio metal, like hair metal type stuff in there. And I thought it all really fit it super well. There's even points where the movie nods at the music that's playing, like, listen to this, just to make sure you got the, look how 90s this is. And it is. And it actually kind of gets you into it.
Yeah, there's some genuinely funny, like, video gamey humor in it, too. There's a boss fight at one point, and Max Cloud starts kind of cheating the boss by hiding, and then the boss stops noticing it because he goes too far away. I think its biggest flaw is maybe that it could have used another pass of, like, punch-up. It's funny enough all the way through to where I did enjoy most of it, and it had these, like, really standout moments, like, throughout. It was very cute to me, more than it was funny.
I think a lot of the problem there wasn't even the script, because there are points where I'm like, that line could have been funny. You needed to shoot it again and try a different take on it, especially some of the stuff with John Hannah, where he's trying to play this like ridiculous over the top villain. And a lot of the time it just doesn't land with lines. I'm like, that's a funny line. They should have read it differently.
Yeah. And Hannah knows that delivery. I mean, you know, most of us probably know him from the Mummy movies, where it's like, you are playing that really pulpy, campy character. You're the comic relief for that first movie, at least. I mean, that whole movie's got comic relief out the ass, but especially his character is meant to be the kind of poncy guy who has to put up with it, but somehow it's still good. And here he's trying to play up, like, he's got a very 80s vibe, where he's, like, doing workout tapes from the 80s, listening to that music, and it's super playing up that meta. And there's moments that it works, because he's selling it as hard as he can. But yeah, the director just doesn't seem to give him or other characters really direction. Like, the character Cowboy, we didn't mention earlier, is the best friend of Sarah, the main character, who's playing the game or controlling her, played by Franz Drema. He was in Attack the Block. He's in Edge of Tomorrow for a little bit. He's in The Gentleman. Like, this guy does have acting chops, even if he's not been, you know, in such a major role in any of those movies. And I felt like his character, they continue to try to make him comedy relief in this as well. And it's like, look, none of these bits are really hitting. And I don't think it's him. And I don't know if it's the script. Like, there's the one about, like, I had to really go to the bathroom while playing this video game. That could have been a really good bit. I really felt bored by that joke. It's like, this is taking way too long and I'm not finding it funny. Please stop having this character walk into a wall.
Yeah, there's bits where you can see how this could have been funny, but then it just ended up being an old joke that they did nothing new with. But then they'd surprise you and do stuff that was like, okay, that was a genuinely funny thing. Like what Ryan mentioned, the whole like, oh, if he can't see you, then he forgets you're there and just turns around. I'm like, that was a cute moment that also could have been filmed better.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's something from a Doctor Who episode, the way it's shot. Like, I mean, an old Doctor Who episode, just like a static camera. And you're like, what are you doing, man? Come on. Most of the problems here I assigned to the director and some of his choices, which I thought were weird.
Yeah. And even with the main villain, there was like the scene you talked about him doing like the old 80s, like workout tapes, just the coverage in a lot of the scenes, especially that one. And the one you just mentioned was just kind of weird. It was just felt like they just had that basic wide shot coverage and they kind of stayed in that wide shot. And there were certain moments where it worked, but it felt more like a limitation than anything. I can't help but to think that may be related to the budget. I feel like they did what they could with the budget, and I did enjoy it more than I didn't, I guess.
See, that's another issue too, though, is like there were scenes where you were like, clearly they made this decision because of the budget, and it's okay. But one thing really bugged me here, because they were had a series of, oh, this is a boss fight. And so they'd go back and forth in the boss fight to what it looks like on the video game. And then they had this one boss, it was this huge monster, and they never cut back because it's a huge monster. Yeah. And you're like, there is a joke there. You could have played that for a joke. Yeah. But as it is, all it does is take you right out of the movie and reminds you that, they clearly couldn't afford to do that monster. So they just didn't do anything, which I was like, why have it in there at all?
The whole low budget thing kind of reminded me of Monster Force Zero that we just reviewed like a month or two
I'm
ago.
I'm so sorry.
That was like, it was like almost slightly entertaining how low budget that movie was. It was the same kind of humor they tried to get away with just because it was like a low budget kind of cosplay thing, and it didn't really work in either. It almost got there.
And there is joy to be found here, and I think there's a lot of good performances. I think Atkins is, once again, I mean, you can't get a bad performance out of Atkins, generally speaking, especially when he is told, just turn yourself up to 11, which, you know, I mean, his personality-wise, he does. But this is also trying to make fun of the dumb machismo of games in this period of time and the sexism, and they are some ways in the plot that plays out kind of predictably but charmingly, and some jokes about that, especially at the expense of Max, who really secretly just wants to be a baker.
I forget the name of the comic exactly, but I remember the whole punchline is the URL to this webcomic, which is the punchline is machismo. And it's literally, they're making fun of every like space marine character, and they show up and it's Solid Snake. And it's like, oh, all of them have to learn to be normal people because they're so used to being the hero and the machismo. And this does that well, partially because, again, Atkins sells it well. But, you know, there's a good supporting cast. Elliot James Langridge as Jake is doing great work being Sarah, who's like, I idolize you, but you're also kind of dumb. We should really not follow your plan. Then we also have the Brock Donnelly space cowboy character by Tommy Flanagan, which is like, you're the perfect parody to Max. You actually understand your limits as an action hero. Max thinks everything is going to work out because he can punch it.
But even so, they're also playing him in the same way. There's a scene where like, we saw you catch on fire. He's like, but I'm, and just says his name. And they're like, how is that an explanation? You know, there are moments that it works. And you're right, we didn't even mention these other characters. There's actually a decent amount of characters in here. There's nobody I didn't like. I thought there was kind of an odd reason to bring the dad back at the end. There's nothing I actively disliked in the movie other than wishing it was actually overall better than it is.
I think a lot of that's on the director, who's Martin Owen here, who, honestly, I was looking at his career, it's like, yeah, you haven't really had anything that's achieved, you know, a level above what I think this is. Like, the biggest one that I think I watched any of was Killers Anonymous, which is not that good either. And he also co-wrote this, which I think is part of that too, where he probably did the scene and he was probably just too like, oh, no, that's, you said my lines, I'm proud of that. It's like, yeah, but you might want to shoot it better.
By the way, Lashana Lynch, who was the number two bad guy in here, also played Maria Rambeau in Captain Marvel and Nomi in No Time to Die. This is a good cast. I don't know how they got this many good people in this movie, but I will say, if nothing else, I think the crowd that this is aimed for are going to generally like it. You know, when I say that some of the action scenes, they are very violent, but they are not graphic. They're video game violent. Like, he does things that if they had chosen to like amplify it with blood would be like, Jesus Christ, dude. But there's like no blood. Like, he like at one point takes a knife and shoves it through some guy's head, pinning him to the ceiling, and then takes it out of the guy who falls and stabs another guy with it. And you're like, okay, so it's filled with shit like that, but it's so ridiculous and so bloodless that it's hard to say, oh, well, this is just for adults, because it's not.
I'm pretty sure they just let Atkins do his own choreography. And I'm sure if you like dig through the notes, there's probably him as second unit where he got to also set up the shots for his own fights. Because these are well-shot fight scenes. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy. That's the biggest thing I think almost every American action movie misses is like, hey, we got, you know, this amazing action star. Cool, why are there six cuts in this fight scene? But here, you see Scott Atkins take down a hallway. You see him like using a guy he stuck to the ceiling as human shield, even though the guy's dead, and just use him for cover. I'm like, these are great creative fight scenes when they work, and they let him have fun with it. And that's really where I think this movie shines the best.
Well, let's go to final thoughts, our wrap up, and we're going to get started with Ryan. Ryan, what are your final thoughts?
This movie was a lot of fun. I know this is 1990, but it has that kind of like over-the-top 80s aesthetic kind of at points. And I know some people are tired of that. I always enjoy it. I think it's really fun. Although I do think that it maybe could have used some punch-up and that there were some directing choices that could have been better. I do think this is a fun watch. And although I can't enthusiastically recommend it, I wasn't disappointed after, and I don't feel like I wasted my time with it. They incorporate a lot of different video game styles, and I think that was kind of a smart directing choice. Like, it starts off as kind of like a side scroller kind of beat 'em up, and then later on it turns into like Street Fighter, like Mortal Kombat style. And I think that that kept things kind of visually interesting and made it fun and was probably one of the better directing choices. I know that's something we've criticized a little bit. Although I can't enthusiastically recommend it, I'd say I would give it 5.5 out of 10 Game Genie cheat codes.
Max, what about you?
It was fun. I think it came out at a good time when everybody is playing Cyberpunk right now, because it's a similar kind of 80s retro type of thing. So everybody's kind of looking for other type of movies to watch that are similar to that. It was interesting to see a lower budget version of like the newer Jumanji movies. It's always interesting to see like early 20s girl in a dude's body, just trying to see how like the dude would act as that girl. I wouldn't super recommend it. It was fun to watch. I'd give it a 6 out of 10 Invisible Walls.
I agree with you, Max. I think it is fun to see that, which is why I record with Ben so much, because it's always fun to watch that. But
really? I had to dye my hair blue to be more interesting. What do you want from me?
There are two mohawks on this show, okay? I'm breaking here. Somebody was gonna get hit, and I've never recorded with Max on one before, so it was you by default.
Look, 30 something years ago, when you had enough hair for a mohawk, I'm sure it would have looked great.
That is totally a fair cop.
That's why I do the mohawk, because I don't have enough hair to have a normal hairstyle.
Ben, what are your final thoughts?
Just like you, Chris, I saw Scott Adkins. I'm like, I'm watching this movie. You know, especially from the Fantastic Fest crowd, we adore him in action movies. He's shown up once and basically was the biggest celebrity, regardless of who else was there. He was like, oh my God, Scott Adkins. He's literally the American answer to Asian action stars that we love now, because he's the only one, I think, who regularly does these movies and has a big enough name to pull them.
Who can keep up with those guys.
Yeah, exactly. Because like, I remember like Ninja Shadow of a Tear, and it's like, dude, this movie's so stupid and you're so good in it, and I don't know why.
The entirety of Fantastic Fest is on the Adkins diet, that is for sure.
Yeah, oh my God. He sells this movie. He sold me on it. If you have any idea who Scott Adkins is enough to love him, just watch this movie. Like, that's all you need to know. You won't get the best movie in the world out of it. You'll have fun. We haven't talked about at least one other character, Rexy, played by Sally Collett, I won't get into the spoilers about like deeper stuff about her character, but when she first shows up, it's great because she's the first character who seems like has any awareness of the stupidity of their world, because she's so just bitterly sarcastic about everything going on. And it starts kind of turning the movie a bit more for me past just being the Adkins movie, because it lets the other characters breathe and actually have more to work with. I wish they did more of that. I wish they let more of these lines play. I wish they didn't try to dig into the camp. It almost ends up like how Birdemic was like, oh yeah, we have no budget. Let's make it where we have no budget. It's like, no. You use a lot of budget for some really nice sets in this space adventure. Maybe just let you guys have fun with it and, you know, work with your talent to make the lines sing. But you don't get that. Put it on like, you know, after Christmas when you're all bored with whatever family you've been stuck with for 6 months already. That'll be fun time. You know, you're all tired. You're all happy and content. You just want something dumb to put on in the background while the little kids play with toys. This is great for that. I'm going to give it 6.5 out of 10 glitching doors that you really wish you could find faster.
We're all more or less on the same page. I think this is decently fun for what it is, which is taking into account the small budget and everything. I'm shocked that they got as many like mid-level stars as they did. I love Atkins once again. I mean, I can't say enough good things about how much fun he is as an actor. And the fact that he knows he's not the star of this film, but he's been told to act as if he's a guy slowly realizing he's not the star of the film. That's his character, is the guy slowly realizing he's not the protagonist here and coming to terms with that. And it's really funny. He's definitely the standout thing about this movie in every way. No one else is really bad in it. If anybody is to blame, I think there's just some bad choices behind the scenes. Like I said, there's some weird director choices, and there is some writing that needed 2 or 3 more passes. I mean, there's so many moments in here where I'm like, the joke was right there, and you either went for the stupid, dumb, everybody's done it 20 times already joke, or you just missed it altogether. Baffling. But for every 5 jokes they missed, there's 2 that they didn't miss and got right. So it is entertaining. You haven't seen much like it despite comparisons to Jumanji. I mean, it's its own animal. Overall, I feel very genial towards it. I'm going to give it 6 out of 10 missed opportunities.
Did anyone else notice that first scene when she turns into Jake and she realizes it's the real Max Cloud? She looks like down like, Oh, I'm getting a boner from Max Cloud. What's a boner? And it's like, oh, that could have been a good joke. And then they kept it really PG. I'm like, damn it.
It's a missed opportunity.
Could have made a lady boner joke from E3 like 3 years ago.
And I'm like, yeah, I think I got a boner when I saw Scott Atkins. Like, stop it.